Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Wrestling Tonight. This is Dr. John Stamey live from the sun and fun capital of the world, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. We've got a great show tonight. I mean, you know, I was just talking to everybody in the green room. The whole purpose of this show is to make new friends. That's really what it's all about. And in the wrestling world, you can't have enough friends. So first of all, I want to say hello and welcome to my great friend, Chaz Moretti. Chaz, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing just fine, Dr. John. Thanks for asking. You know, like you said before, you can't have too many friends, but, you know, me being as rich as I am, I could probably buy those people. Anyway, long story short, things up in Chicago are starting to turn. Weather's starting to get bad. You know, we're starting to get rain and cold, but that's what we're used to. If rain was sunshine, we'd be up to our eyeballs right now, so it's all good.
Well, that's all right. Well, I tell you, we're down here in Myrtle Beach, and we're actually having some cloudy weather, but it's still wonderful in the sun and fun capital of the world. It really is. So we're glad to have you here. We've got the professor of wrestling. Oh, my goodness. How are you doing, Steve Logan?
Doing great. Just going to listen to the interview and have some questions later.
Well, that's great. We're so glad to have you. Oh, my goodness. And I have a 914 number. I have a 914 number. That is one of my very best, newest friends, not Mr. 914. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Dr. John. How are you tonight, my friend?
I'm doing great. This is Tony Capone, and he is the guy. He is the reason that we're here. He has put this incredible thing together, and he. By the way, Tony, you have inspired me, and I've got some news to tell you later after the show. You have truly inspired me, so you've done a good job. You get an A+ because I am the professor.
You
get an A+. So, Tony, tell us, and in fact, I want you to tell us right now, if you don't mind, what's going on with the NAWA? What new news do we need to know? Because it's important.
Well, I just want to recap something we spoke about last week, and it's going to be officially coming out this week as we speak. But to give you a little insight, the NAWA is going to be going to Daytona Beach, Florida on December 19th, Saturday night. It is going to be a live pay-per-view event through Fight TV. The card is all set up. Tickets will be on sale next Monday on October 12th. If everything goes as planned right now, Florida opened up a lot of restrictions for COVID, which we're just trying to iron out with the governor and the county of Volusia to make sure everything is set with that. And the card right now, we're working on the talent that's on the show, but we recently signed this past week Cahagas, who was a NWA triple champ, who's going to be on the show. Michael Lando, Green Machine, formerly with the WWF, is already signed to the show as we speak. And there's a lot of surprises, too. And to be honest with you, things have been going great. The sport's been overwhelming. And I just want to once again thank everyone out there, your crew and, you know, Granny Hogan and Malcolm, my man, and, you know, Chaz behind the scenes that's making all this come to fruition. And I do have a major surprise that's going to be announced next Sunday, and it has to do with one of our own truly Papa Stroh. So that'll keep in the back burner, and we'll debut that next Sunday. But there is something in the works with Dr. Stroh and the NAWA as we speak.
Are you talking about one of my best friends in the world, Papa Stroh? That's awesome.
That is correct. We've been talking, and you know, there's something that we have to iron out in the next couple of days, but we're going to be making a major debut on the show next Sunday with Papa Stroh and myself, and looking forward to it. I really am.
Well, that's great.
Mr. Capone,
I couldn't be happier.
Mr. Capone, this is Steve. I wanted to ask
Steve.
Yes.
Is this Mr. Mancini?
No, this is this is Steven.
Steve.
Oh, Steve.
This is the professor of wrestling, Steven.
Steve, you had such a deep voice there for a second.
comes with the territory. I was interested to see that you signed a Cahagas. How did that come to be?
Basically through some of my friends in the business, and what's happening, Steve, and it's not a secret. We're trying to get the best of the best on the independent circuit right now. And Cahagas, to me, is one of the best that's out there in the circuit. Phenomenal wrestler, has many years of experience, and where you have an association going on right now. It is not long-term right now as we speak, and I'm in final negotiations to bring him on a full-time steady basis. In addition to that, we are in negotiations talks also with, as of today, with James Storm, formerly with NWA, and quite a few
nice.
Other great talent that's out there. So I think once the card is all set and done and people get to see the product, it's just going to be superb. We're taking the best of the best from every organization that's out there, not limiting to AEW, ROH, Impact, TNA, MLW, Championship Hollywood, everyone. So our card is going to be something that's unique that people haven't seen out there, and it's going to go back to the old style where you're going to have that 50 minutes of wrestling with that 10 minutes of talking. So totally different change of what's out there right now, and I'm very, very proud of my product and our product and the people behind the scenes, with Paul Rowan and Mario Mancini, all these people that are like bringing all this to fruition, Cindy and Big Sal from ECW, all these people are working hard behind the scenes to put the best product out there. But yeah, Cahagas, I'll tell you, great talent, and it started as a small introduction and turned out to a one-show deal, and now we're negotiating a long-term contract as we speak.
That's great. I did have to ask because I like his look. I've seen some of his work on the Gangrel's Wrestling Asylum, so I had to follow up on that. But Dr. John, please continue.
Yeah, and what I was going to tell Tony is not only are they great wrestlers, they're very interesting folks. We talked with Cindy Snow. She's a big paranormal fan. She's going to come up and do a big ghost with us in Harlan, Kentucky. And Tony, you've got great people that have great interests, and they just work out with all kinds of cool things that are going on. So I got to say kudos to Cindy Snow. Oh, my God. She is just like one of the coolest people I've ever met. And thanks to you. So you get as the professor, you get an A+, Tony, for bringing some honest people in the world.
I appreciate that, John. But, to be honest with you, my whole life I've sort of associated myself with people that are that I can look up to. And Cindy, as a female wrestler and just as an overall person, the other side of the wrestling, not just the business, but the personal side. Such a great person in general, and really will open up her heart to anybody. You know what I'm saying? That's just the kind of person she is. Same thing with, the other people in the crew. With Paul Rowan, Mario Mancini, my mentor, great guy. There for me 24/7. So and it's hard to build an organization where you're dealing with so many different personalities, and I've been able to make this to where everyone's like blending in together and becoming a real united family. And even like you guys now that I got to know recently, and we've had tons of conversations behind the scene, and it's just, tell me what you want. I'll make it happen. Just tell me what you want and I'll do it. And I'm working literally nonstop to get this off the ground, and it'll come with great satisfaction once the fans see the product and stand behind the product. And it will be something that's really unique, and my stamp of approval. And I think once I get the fan stamp of approval, that will be satisfaction itself to me personally.
Well, that's great. Tony, we appreciate everything that you've done because you're bringing us, I'm a fan. I'm an announcer, but I'm a fan. And you are bringing us what we want. And by the way, Tony, and I'm going to announce this here, I've got a present that I'm going to be bringing you later this week. And I think you're going to be very, very happy with it. I'm working with a wrestler, one of the greatest wrestlers in history, and I'm going to be bringing that wrestler to NAWA, and I can't wait to introduce you to them, and I think you're going to really love them. So, it's all about being friends. It's all about making things happen, being friends, and just loving what you do, because you know what? Tony, do you love wrestling? Yes or no?
Oh, it's in my blood. I was kicking out of my mom's womb.
I'll tell you what, that's what brought me back to the business. And I have loved wrestling since the day I was born. And everybody used to look at me and say, John, you're crazy. And you know what? They're not. This is one of the greatest things that ever happened. Professional wrestling is incredible. It's what brings us, it brings us together, and we love it. So, first of all, we're thrilled to have you on this show, Tony. We really are, because you are the godfather. You are the godfather of wrestling, and you are doing something that no one else can possibly do. So thank you very much for everything you're doing. Right. And let me ask you this now, will we hang out with you next week on the show? Will you be back with us? I hope you will.
I definitely have to come on next week, because I have to tell you what's going on with ourselves, the NAWA, and Papa Stroh. So, yeah, I'd like to make a big announcement with Papa Stroh next Sunday. Absolutely, I'll be here.
Yeah. And, Tony, you got to stick around tonight, because we got a mystery guest that's going to blow you away.
Chaz, don't do this to me. Don't get me off guard.
No. It's a good thing, I promise. For our Jewish friends, it's mazel. It's good things, but you're going to love it.
All right. You got it. I'll stick around. I tell you what,
Tony, we really want to work with you, and we want to make you happy, because you're doing a great thing for us. So thank you so much.
Dr. John, listen, my night wouldn't be complete if I didn't hear from Malcolm. Is he out there? Like, you scared a little shout out from Malcolm?
No, Malcolm's not here tonight, unfortunately, Tom. Sorry.
Tonight. Oh, that's a shame, man. Oh, man. All right, well, I'll talk to him.
Yeah, I'll try to get him for next week. He's not here tonight, unfortunately. I got a mystery guest instead. You're going to love him.
All right, we'll see what happens.
But anyway, now I'm going to turn this show over to the one and only Chaz Moretti, because you have our guest tonight.
It's about time.
And so I know, I'm sorry. I try to hog the things, though. All right, Chaz, it's up to you. You're next.
All right, kumbaya. Take a seat and relax. I got this from here. Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you privileged enough to live through the second golden age of professional wrestling during the 1980s, do I have a treat for you. For those of you who are too young to remember the 1980s, pay attention, because you're going to learn something tonight from my next guest. He is a gentleman that has been everywhere in the sport of professional wrestling, was a mainstay in the WWF during the 80s into the 90s, and I want to introduce him right now. He is also the head of talent relations for the North American Wrestling Alliance. I am speaking of none other than Mario Mancini. Mario, welcome to the show. How are you tonight, sir?
Good, guys. I appreciate you having me on. I really do.
We appreciate you coming on totally, I gotta be honest. I was a huge fan. I used to tune in every Saturday, and every Saturday I see Mario Mancini. I'm going, you know what? He's Italian. He's got to win. Mario, do us a favor. Why don't you tell, for the sake of those of the listeners that are joining us for the first time, or were too young to remember the 80s, you want to go back and give us a brief history of your involvement in professional wrestling?
I started going to wrestling school. Tony Altamar trained me, who was one half of the tag team champions with Lou Albano. They were the Sicilians. And I walked into his wrestling school in October of 1983, which was my senior year of high school. So I graduated high school on June 20th. I turned 18 on June 21st, the next day, and then July 31st, I turned pro against Greg Valentine at the Nick Hudson Civic Center in Poughkeepsie, New York.
Oh, that's awesome. Was the Hammer the Intercontinental Champion at that time, or was that before he took the reins of that title?
No, he was the Intercontinental Champ at that time. And, you know, the way it happened was myself, AJ Petrucci, Dave Barbie, and Seth Cohen, who worked as Robbie Parliament, while we were going to wrestling school, Tony Altamar had told us that we were friends, so we were sparring. But when we turned pro, we really had to apply this stuff. So he kept kayfabe alive and well. So when I went downstairs in the dressing room and I was informed that I was wrestling Greg Valentine, I asked Jay Strongbow whether it was a title shot or not, because I was going to beat him. And he kind of glared at Tony Altamar, and it was then, at that moment, that, you know, Altamar put his arm around me and said, well, you know, why don't you go talk to Valentine? And I said, why am I going to talk
Love
to
it.
Him? I'm wrestling. And he said, just go talk to him. So I went to talk to Valentine, and I said, I'm wrestling you. And he goes, yeah, you know, just keep your leg loose on that figure four leg lock. He goes, if you keep them stiff, you're going to hurt yourself. I'm not going to hurt you. He goes, so just keep them real loose. And it was then it hit me that I was losing. So I looked at him and I said, can I get a comeback? And he said, yes, absolutely. After you submit to the figure four, get off the canvas and come back to the dressing room. And I said,
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. That's, you know what? That was probably very sage advice on his part, but, you know, God bless Tony Altamar for having you at the top of your game. I mean, in your opening match, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what happened, the second match, August 9th, 1984, in the Westwark Music Theater, I worked with David Schultz, and he broke my nose in two places. You know, I had to get surgery and have it reset and everything. And Strongbow was the agent that night. And that is when, you know, after that, we really formed a bond. And he was like my second father for 28 years, up to like 3 months before he fell. And unfortunately, that led to him passing away. But, you know, he was my mentor, and he was my protector. And I owe a lot to Jay Strongbow. So he was like a dad to me.
Yeah,
I mean,
go ahead, Dr. John. Go ahead.
I tell you what, Jay Strongbow has got one of the greatest reputations in all of professional wrestling. He was one of the best in the world. Right, Mario?
Well, listen, it went beyond wrestling. You know, you know, when I got out in 92 at the ripe age of 26 years old, you know, we kept in contact a couple times a month. And you know, he just helped me not only in wrestling, but beyond wrestling, he helped me in life. You know, I'd call him up for advice you know, he was always there for me. I miss him a lot.
Mario,
explain
what it was like to be in the locker room between 84 and 86, when Hulkamania was just starting, when you had, you know, basically all of the vets that were there from the era of the 70s, with Vince Sr. moving into the WrestleMania era, as I like to call it, under Vince McMahon Jr. What was it like just to be in that locker room?
Well, you know, a lot of people ask me, you know, did you know what was going on when you were there, you know, and you just kind of took it day by day. You really didn't know. When I say that, you know, I was, for instance, I was Taker's debut match in the WWF. I was the first guy he ever worked with. So his debut was not the Survivor Series. I worked with him in Hartford, Connecticut on November 19th. But my match aired after Survivor Series, and everybody always asks me, you know, did you know that he was going to last as long as he did and have the fame? No, I didn't, because I also was the debut match of Big Bully Busick. I mean, and Skinner, what happened to them? You know what I mean? So same thing with the WrestleMania thing. And in fact, I'll tell you a real funny story. I was just kind of going through YouTube one day, and it said the birth of Hulkamania. And basically it was Hogan's match against Iron Sheik. And after he threw Sheik out of the ring, I saw myself there. And I'm famous for my memory. I mean, I have a great memory. But I didn't remember that I was there. It was January of 84. It was 7 months before I broke in. And there I was with my arm around the Iron Sheik, getting back to the dressing room after Hogan took the strap from him. And it all came back to me that Altamar asked me if I wanted to go to the garden that night. And I said, sure. And, did I know then? I just knew Hulk Hogan was the new heavyweight champion. And when I broke in 8 months before WrestleMania 1. And, you know, I did see it all unfold. And you know, it was very small back then, gentlemen. The WWF was very small. And when I say that, there was no Bundy. There was no Savage. You know, these guys weren't there. You know what I mean? These guys didn't even come yet. They didn't arrive yet. And it was very small. It was the Moondogs and the Samoans and Andre and Big John Studd and me, SD Jones, Mike Sharp, you know, Johnny Rods, Jose Luis Rivera, you know, Don Morocco, Paul Orndorff, Greg Valentine, Bret Hart came shortly after that. But probably the funniest thing was when Macho Man did come. And he walked by where I was sitting in Poughkeepsie, and he was going to the men's room. And I looked back at the back of his trunks, and it said M&M. So I went up to Strongbow, and I said, "Hey, who's the guy with my initials on his trunks?" And he goes, "Mind your business." I go, "Hey, this guy's got my initials on his trunks. Who is that? The guy with the hay hair?" He goes, "What do you mean hay hair?" I go, "You know, his hair's flopping around when he's walking. Who is that guy? The skinny guy," I said. He goes, "That's the Macho Man." I said, "How's a Macho Man?" You know, so these guys came shortly, and then Bundy came in March of 85, you know, and I was his debut match. But, you know, WrestleMania, I got to meet Danny DeVito and Joe Piscopo and you know, a whole host of Aretha Franklin, Billy Martin. I mean, it was something for an 18-year-old kid just to sit back and kind of just take it in. You know, in other interviews, I like to say that, you know, I was a boy in a man's world at that point, and I really had to mature quickly, and that broken nose did it for me. I'll tell you that. I just recently, in August, you know, I sent David Schultz a text thanking him for breaking my nose, because back then, it was still old school where you had to prove whether you belonged or not. And they would test you and they would beat the hell out of you. So, you know, which hence when I started instructing pro wrestling, then I just passed that along. So in order to get through the wrestling school, I had to beat the hell out of you like they beat the hell out of me. So, I did that quite early in my career. Battle royals where they'd line up and chop me until my chest started bleeding, my broken nose, you know, stretching me, Les Thornton stretching me. And you know, I got it over pretty early. So I was accepted. And I consider myself very fortunate because there were a lot of guys like me that came in and out. You know what I mean? There's some guy sitting at home with his kids that has that one YouTube video of his only match in the WWF because they never asked him to come back. And I was fortunate enough to be under contract. The only contract I was under is that Vince McMahon owned me. It certainly wasn't for a yearly amount. It was just for the fact that he owned me. So, you know, I appreciate the fact that, you know, anytime I mention it, I say he allowed me to work for him for 8 years. And the operative word being allowed me to work for him, because I never sold the ticket. There was no one was in St. Louis going, "Oh, my God, Mario Mancini's coming. I need to run to the box office." So, you know, I was fortunate enough to be there long, you know. So, I did a stretcher with Orndorff before WrestleMania, wanted to get him over Strong. He gave me a pile driver on the concrete floor, and, Strongbow handpicked me for that to get him over big because, WrestleMania was coming. And I was there for WrestleMania, and, it was a lot of fun. You know, it was just, as they say in Goodfellas, it was a glorious time. And I'm thankful. It's almost tearful when I can spend some time with Greg Valentine, if I can spend some time with Tito Santana or Demolition, Barry and Billy, Tony Atlas, I'm very close to. So when Danny Davis, when I get to spend time with these guys, I really cherish it because, the one that broke my heart recently was Bundy, because I was supposed to see Bundy, but he passed away. He's very close to Chris. In fact, it was the Godfather himself that brought that touching moment to me in 1999 when he called me and said, you want to work? And I said, well, I haven't worked in 7 years. I'm a little rusty. My timing's a little off, but thanks anyway. And I said, just for the hell of it, who was I working with? And he goes, Bundy. And I go, when is it? When do you want me there? So I'm very thankful to Tony Capone that I was able to go in on a different organization and have a different kind of match with such a good friend of mine as Chris was. It meant a lot to me. So I was really looking forward to seeing him. But unfortunately, God took him before I could have a couple laughs with him. So.
Sure. Well, Mario, I got to tell you, though, don't sell yourself short, because – I can remember back to the mid-'80s, 85 going into 86, that there was a little old Italian lady on Taylor Street in Chicago that used to root for you every time she saw you. And every time one of them Americans did something wrong to you, my grandmother got upset.
Well, God bless your grandmother, because this was my plan. So this is a true story. I'm doing a screenplay right now, but this is in the screenplay. It was actually 1980, and I was 14 years old, and I was having a sleepover during the summer with my best friend, and we actually had a tent outside, and we were in the tent, and what my parents and nobody else knew in there is there was a girl in that tent, and she was pulling her shirt up, and we were having a good time. We were 14 years old, so that was everything to us. So all of a sudden, my sister had yelled out the bathroom window, and she said, you better get up here right now. And it was after midnight. So I ran into the house upstairs, and Vince McMahon was sitting in an empty arena with Bruno Sammartino. And he said, Bruno, you have an announcement to make. And I was standing there watching it. And I'm the last of six kids. So my whole family, my mother and father, were in there. And Bruno said, yeah, it's time. I retire. My last match is going to be in Shea Stadium against George Steele. And I looked at my family and I said, I'm going to be a professional wrestler. I said, I'm going to wrestle for the WWF. I said, I'm going to be a pro wrestler. And they said, are you out of your mind? I said, no, I'm going to be a pro wrestler. And I said that at 14 years old. So my intention was to go in and be the next Bruno Sammartino. But I didn't know I was going to go in and be the next Frank Williams, but that's okay.
You know what, though, Mario, I'll tell you, back then, just as being a fan back then, I mean, with the era of kayfabe still alive, I mean, it was just a testament to your talent and to your work, the kind of stories that you told in that ring. I mean, with the myriad of talent that you worked with. So it's going to segue to my next question. You've worked a ton of people, and you were debut matches for Bundy and for Undertaker. Who was your favorite match, if you can pick out one favorite match?
I'd have to say, on 9/11, on September 11th, 1986, myself and Gino Tarabella walked into the New Haven Coliseum. Which in New Haven, Connecticut, which is demolished now. It's a parking lot. But we walked into the New Haven Coliseum at at 6 o'clock, and Arnold Skolin looked at us and held his hand to his forehead. And I said, Arnie, what's wrong? And he said, everyone is on the same plane, and they're all going to be late. I need 30 minutes out of you guys. It's like a gift that you guys just walked through the door. I go, we just came to, you know, have some fun. You know, and it, because in wrestling, the wrestling got in the way of the camaraderie. And you guys mentioned making friends. You know, the code, the brotherhood, the camaraderie in pro wrestling is like none other. So Gino and I just went there to BS and have some laughs. But the Boy Scout rule is, no matter where you go, always have your bag. So, you know, so Arnie looked at me and said, what do you have for a finish? And I said, a reverse flying body press off the second rope. He said, use it. And we went out there, and we did about 25 minutes before the ref came in and said, everybody's here, take it home. And, you know, because they announced me from Milford, Connecticut, you know, when I went over, Howard Finkel was 3 feet away from me announcing my name. I couldn't hear him. The place was shaking. It was amazing. And I went back to the dressing room, and, you know, Skolin was there with that big cigar in his mouth, and he was laughing like the Penguin, going, great kid, great, that was great kid, great, terrific. You know, you go, because they reported to Vince every night after the show, so he goes, I'm going to tell Caesar about this. I'm going to tell Caesar how good you did. You know, they called Vince Caesar because he was the ruler of the empire. So,
sure.
You know, I looked at Arnold Skolin and I said, Arnie, I know I got a pop because I live 20 minutes away, but I promise you, if I can just get a chance, I can have him do that in Chicago. I swear I can. And he said, I know you could, kid. I said, I just need a chance. And, you know, that was a great night. The other great night was when I was in Madison Square Garden, and I went back and forth into the dressing room about 3 times. And then they were short one guy to work Tony Atlas, and Tony Altamar said, get dressed. And I couldn't find the dressing room. I said, where's the dressing room? He goes, you've just been in and out of it about 3 times. I go, no, I can't find it now. And he goes, straight over there. So I went into the ring, and Howard Finkel said, don't look up. And that's what I did immediately when he said that. I looked up, and I was in front of 22,000 people. And, you know, that was memorable also. Other than that, it's working house shows with Bret Hart. Most of all, working house shows with Don Morocco was one of my favorite things because I just love Don Morocco. I did his podcast last month, and I was a surprise guest, and he saw my face, and he had a big smile on his face. And the SOB goes, hey, you got old. I go, what the hell, Donnie? You know what I mean? So, you know, working with him was a lot of fun. I remember we were in the dressing room. He goes, at one point, I'll reverse it. You reverse it and him, you would a drop kick. I said, yeah, no problem. And, he goes, you get a drop kick, right? I'm like, oh yeah. So I reverse it and throw him in, and I hit him with a drop kick, and he picks me up by the hair right away, takes me in a headlock and takes me down. And I go, what are you doing? I just drop kicked you. Why'd you do that? He goes, you drop kicked me in the knees. He goes, I thought you said you can drop kick. I said, I lied. And he started laughing his ass off in the headlock. So I had a lot of fun with Morocco. And, it was a great time. Another thing with Bruno, which pwned it for me, was, you know, in 1999, he was the commissioner of the NAWA, and I never got a chance to talk to him in the WWF, and I got an hour to sit with him in the dressing room, and Bundy was there. And by the time I was done with Bruno spilling my guts to him, he looked at me and said, Mancini, I wish you were my son. And that was just something I'll always remember. Am I pissed that I didn't get a picture with him? You know, when I started in the law firm I worked with in 1995, when I started in the law firm, they said, well, you're going to bring in all your pictures? I go, what pictures? He goes, well, don't you have pictures from when you wrestled? I go, no, you don't do that. We just didn't do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, God forbid if you have to take a picture with a guy, he'd go, why don't you just buy a ticket to the show, you Mark? So that was taboo, something that we never did. So, unfortunately, that, you know, I kept to the old school rules where, you know, you stayed as professional as you could. And
sure.
But I looking back, I think I would have had the nerve to say, you know what, screw the rules. You know, someday I'm going to be older and I'm going to want these. So, but at the time I didn't.
I understand. Well, since we've talked about the past, let's move forward into the future. Now, Mario, we're so happy to have you involved in the North American Wrestling Alliance, the NAWA. You care to tell the fans and tell our listeners a little bit more about what role you have, what you do with regards to talent relations with the NAWA?
Well, any podcast I do and any interview I do, you know, I keep a rule that I don't lie. Whether it incriminates me or incriminates other people or makes them look whatever, I don't lie. I always tell the truth. So I am the president of talent relations for the NAWA. I am going to interact with the talent. I'm going to, you know, but the main thing I'm here for and the main reason I want to be here for is to watch out for my dear friend, because my dear friend walked into Pastorals Quest in 1990 and said, I want to be a pro wrestler. And that was 30 years ago. Okay. And I love Tony. And, you know, Tony is a tremendous human being. And Tony's a little like me. You know, I'm the president of the NAWA for talent relations, but I'm also the owner of Paradise Alley Pro Wrestling. And, you know, we want to get along with everybody, and we want to make this thing one big happy family. And sometimes people sniff that out, and they try to get over on you a little bit. But you know what? I want to be involved in this company because I love Tony, and I want to watch his back. Is what I want to do. And he knows I'll do that. And he knows I'll put my hand on his shoulder and say, listen, I got to talk to you. You know what I mean? So the main reason why I want to be involved with this company and I so graciously accepted the role I have in this company is to be with my friend and make sure he's okay.
That's awesome. And again, you know, speaking for myself as a talent with the NAWA, I am so happy to have you on board and to learn from you as we go forward with this thing. And I just want to ask you, would you be able to spend a few minutes with us after we interview our mystery guest to take some questions from our panel?
Absolutely.
Awesome. So here's what we're going to do. Dr. John, are you ready?
I am ready. I am right here.
That's awesome. Tony Capone, are you ready for our mystery guest?
I'm here waiting, Chad.
Hi, right, Steve Logan. Are you ready, sir?
Yes.
Well, that thanks
all
for
right.
answering. Appreciate that
so,
one. Come on, speak up. Speak up. You're amongst friends.
So now,
okay,
now,
here we go.
So now
without
now
further
do I
ado,
introduce our mystery guest.
Oh, yeah, you're going to interview this mystery guest, Dr. John. You know exactly who this man is once I introduce him. Without further ado, I am going to introduce you to the man that is destined to be the number one fan of the North American Wrestling Alliance. He is a very dear friend of mine and fellow member of the Cauliflower Alley Club. Gentlemen, ladies, all listeners, and anybody in between, it is my distinct privilege to introduce you to the one, and I know the only, Malcolm Wildman. Malcolm, how are you tonight?
Get out of here.
Malcolm,
hey, Malcolm, what's
yeah?
up?
Wow.
Malcolm. I hope you're here.
Wow, let's see if we can get Malcolm back. Let's see if we can get Malcolm back on the lane. Where are you, Malcolm?
Hold on.
All right.
I'm on.
There
can you hear me?
Malcolm,
oh, it's about time. Would you want a long introduction? Who do you think you are, Hulk Hogan?
No.
You gonna do imitations now? Who do you think you're? Do you think you're the world champion? I got to sit there and wait for you?
No, my phone hung up on me and I called back.
Malcolm, we just gave you a rousing introduction that I'm not going to repeat, but you, my friend, have got to be the number one wrestling fan and encyclopedia of wrestling knowledge that I've ever met. But you know, we don't know anything about Malcolm Wildman short of your love for professional wrestling. So I'm going to turn this over to Dr. John, and Dr. John's going to ask you a few questions about who Malcolm Wildman is. Does it sound good to you? I'll take that as a yes. Dr. John, it's all yours.
Malcolm, how are you doing tonight?
I need something before I talk to you, Dr. John. Hello to Mario Mancini. The madness is all around you, Mario. Yeah, I remember the madness.
Well, you sound just like him, Malcolm. You sound just like him.
And I told you he's the number one fan I ever met. Dr. John, continue, please.
Absolutely. Malcolm, number one, we're glad to have you here on our show. And number two, I want to ask you something.
Okay.
You have been a wrestling fan all of your life. You have truly been the one that just exudes everything that we appreciate. So why don't you talk about why do you love wrestling? That's a question that and you and I have answered. We've answered this question before, you and I. But tell us, why do you love wrestling?
Well, when I was 5 years old in Vallejo, California, in 1968, my dad bought a TV at Bremen, 19-inch black and white, and we had UHF Channel 20, and Batman and Robin were on there. And Speed Racer, and I'd never seen Batman and Robin in my life, and it was a really cool show to me. And then I watched the fight scenes on that, and I was still pretty young to watch the Three Stooges, but I watched the Three Stooges fight, and me and my sister were watching the Munsters and the Addams Family. It was in September of 1968, and I was 5 years old, and right after that came this big band music, dun, 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 dun. Hank Renner introduced this thing called Big Time Wrestling. And these two guys were on there, Pat Patterson and Rocky Johnson. And I was, my dad was telling me there's no such things as, there's no such person as Batman and Robin and Superman and the Joker and the Penguin. So wrestlers to me at that time were like real life superheroes and villains. You had the great Mephisto and the crazy Luke Graham against Pat Patterson and Rocky Johnson and Ray the Crippler Stevens and Pepper Gomez and Pepper Martin, and the masked interns were the bad guys too, and Don Morocco was just starting out. It was about, Hank Renner introduced him from Sunset Beach White, but he wasn't as big as he was. He was real skinny back then. Superstar Billy Graham, they introduced him, and these guys were like real-life comic book superheroes and villains to me. They would fight each other, bad guys against good guys, and I just took an immediate liking to this, and my dad, when I got into sixth grade, Dad, he played high school in John Sweat in Carquinez, California. It's near Rodale where he worked. And Dad was a star guard on the basketball team. He wanted me to get into sports, but I was more into wrestling because wrestling, it was fun. It was imaginative. And the thing that bothered me the most is my dad wouldn't take me to see a live event. They had a battle royal. It was 71 or 72. Haystack Calhoun and Andre the Giant were in it with the other 28 other wrestlers, and I wanted to go that more than anything. My dad would take me to a baseball game, a football game, a basketball game, but he wouldn't take me to a wrestling match. He said it was silly, stupid, and ridiculous, and he wasn't going to waste his money on it. And as I got older and I got into sixth grade, he's down at the bus stop, and I'm going into junior high in the next year. And you're going to junior high next year, is you need to put the cartoons and the comic books away and put the wrestling on Saturday. I get into sport and be a fan, I just wasn't that way. I told Scotty Steiner at Wrestle Reunion in 2011, I was by him at the top of the escalator, and Scotty was signing my Hulk Hogan jacket. And I told Scott, I wanted to be a wrestler when I was in seventh grade, but my dad was pushing the sports, the 49ers, the Raiders, the Giants, the A's, the Warriors, all these teams on me and want me to get into sports. And it just, it pushed me away from going into Greco-Roman wrestling in seventh grade. And I wanted to do that, but it just didn't happen. And then after I joined the Army, we were at Fort Bliss. I finally got to see my first wrestling match. It was an NWA card. We were in Las Cruces, New Mexico. The main event was Rowdy Roddy Piper and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat against Greg the Hammer Valentine and Ace Cowboy Bob Orton. And man, what a match. I was going out. I almost jumped over the rail out of my seat. The usher was laughing.
Oh, my God.
if you're loving this,
I mean,
what a great
car.
Yeah. Well, we rented a car at Fort Bliss, me and my two roommates, Ken Workman and Paul Gregerson, and they didn't have a main, you know, arena. Well, they had one, but they didn't have a card at that time. We had to go to Las Cruces, cross the border from El Paso. But I was willing to do it, and it was fun, man. I saw so many great wrestlers, Yahoo McDaniel. I saw, I think I saw Ric Flair. It was so long ago. I saw, what was his partner? I'm trying to think. There were so many great NW. I saw Paul Jones. I think I saw Paul Jones, you know. And then I went to Korea, and after I saw that first event, I was really hooked on it. And me and my friend Ken, we used to skip going to lunch at the mess hall so we could watch wrestling on Saturdays. We used to get these LA channels in El Paso in our barracks. And I bought a TV at a TV store at the Cielo Vista Mall in El Paso, and then I paid for cable every week. I'll never forget when the guys talked me in. They worked hard, said, "Malcolm, can you get us the Playboy channel?" So I got it. Mark Creed got all excited. There were like 50, 60 guys in the room watching the Playboy channel. And I took off. I didn't want to watch that. So I went for a walk while the guys were watching. I come back and Mark Reed's out in the middle. You know, the girls are down at the end of the room. And he's grabbing his, you know what, and he's going, "Hey, yo, we got the Playboy down." Mark was from New York. He used to crack me up. He worked for the radios, you know. So anyway, I finally left Fort Bliss, and I went home on leave. And we had Viacom cable, and we were able to get MSG. And I didn't know this was happening because, you know, I was in the middle of getting ready to go over in Korea, and I just got home. My big concentration was the Raiders were playing the Washington Redskins in Super Bowl 18, you know, and I was more focused on that. But I found out January 23rd, 1984, Hulk Hogan, the incredible Hulk Hogan, was taking on the champion, the Iron Sheik, with the Ayatollah Blassie. And Pat Patterson and Gorilla Monsoon were doing the play-by-play. Oh, my God, I almost lost it. When Hogan dropped that leg, when the Sheik had him in the camel clutch, and Pat Patterson goes, "Hulk's got to get out of this. If Hulk can't get out of this, it's all over for the Hulk." And he just gets him. He puts him up, you know, like a piggyback, and he rams him into the back of the turnbuckle. And, Hulk, you know, he did the thing where, he body slammed him, then he dropped the leg, and he got the three count. I went nuts hearing Howard Finkel go, "A new World Wrestling Federation heavyweight champion, the incredible Hulk Hogan." I was going crazy. And then I saw the Polish power, Ivan Putski, Rocky Johnson, and Andre the Giant congratulate Hulk in the back of the room after the match was over. Mean Gene was doing the interview, and his mom and dad were there, you know. And then I got into Korea, and in April I saw Hulk Hogan's picture on the Sports Illustrated magazine. It said wrestling's top banana. I remember 2 years ago I was down in Orlando and I got a poster size of this cover of Sports Illustrated, and Hulk signed it for me in silver because he knows I love the Raiders, you know. But man, I mean, when I saw his picture in the library, it was on the upper compound at Camp Stanton, I was going nuts. Guys had to settle me down. And we had this guy in the barracks, and his dad used to tape all the wrestling that he could and send it over as a care package on videotape. And I bought a VCR. I was one of the few guys that had a VCR in my room. And we'd all gather in the barracks at Camp Stanton in Korea on the weekends. And, man, we'd party. We'd go to the Katusa snack bar and get some snacks, and we'd go to the PX, mini PX, and we'd just sit there and watch wrestling from Saturday and Sunday, you know, and unless it was football season, then we'd watch football, you know, tape delayed football games. But, man, we just loved wrestling. Then I got home in 85, stayed with my grandpa until I could find a regular place, and I was in Vallejo at my grandpa's house, and Saturday night's main event was on. I missed WrestleMania, when it was originally shown, but I saw the second Saturday night's main event. My grandpa, he goes to bed early, and I'm out there yelling, and my grandpa goes, "Hey, Mal, could you keep the noise down? Because what are you watching?" I said, "Wrestling." He goes, "You're watching wrestling?" So my grandpa sat down. He was my mom's stepdad, my grandmother's second husband, and Grandpa Fiskus, his first name was Ralph. Grandpa would sit down, and we were watching wrestling together on Saturday night. He goes, go, hit that guy. It was just fun, you know. And then I was in drill sergeant school, and a bunch of us guys in Vallejo, we got in this car and went down to the Oakland Coliseum Arena, and we saw – we didn't get to see Hulk Hogan, but we got to see we saw Hulk Hogan. We didn't get to see Roddy Piper. I wanted to see Roddy Piper because he was the one that was catching my eye. He was about my size. You know, I wasn't as big as Hulk Hogan. You know, Roddy was more like me. You know, he was 233 pounds, which is more close to my weight. I wasn't that big at that time, but it was close to over 300 pounds, you know. Roddy had, like, my guys at the drill school said, Roddy's got, you know, like, his personality, like Catholic and stuff like that. And I took an instant liking to Roddy Piper. I loved Hulk Hogan, too, you know, but when Piper, it was December 28th, 1984, and I was over in Korea, and we saw the videotape, like, 2 months later when it was sent. And Captain Lou got that record smashed over his head by Piper, you know, and Dick Clark was in the ring and he kicked Cyndi Lauper, you know. I mean, it just – and then it led to the war to settle the score on MTV. I think it was February 18th, 1985, you know. And the year had just changed. And, man, I got home and all I wanted to do was see Hulk Hogan. And I got to see him at the Coliseum. It was in 86. And my buddies in the reserve, the drill sergeant school academy, they had to settle me down because I almost ran down to the ring, and a guy said he grabbed me by the arm. I'm like, "You can't get in there, Malcolm." I said, "I want in there. I love this stuff." You know, I thought it was cool when I was watching Pat and Rocky back in the 60s and 70s. But, man, when Hogan was in there and Greg the Hammer Valentine and Big John Studd, you know, and Bobby Heenan was the crazy man. Jimmy, the Mouth of the South Hart. He had the Hart Foundation, Jim Neidhart and Bret Hart, you know. And it was like real life to me. I mean, I was just running with it, you know. And then, you know, I was on security guard duty in 86. And we had this UHF channel, and I got to see Universal Wrestling Federation in Florida, which is a sister organization of the NWA. And I got to see Dr. Death Steve Williams. We are the champions of the world, Dusty Rhodes, and there was somebody else with them celebrating his championship. And then Sting, I saw the Stinger. I didn't get to see the Blade Runners. I missed them, you know, Rock and Steel or Rock and Flash or whatever they were called, you know, their nicknames. But I saw Terry Taylor. I saw Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert, and then I saw Sting. Oh, God. I saw that Stinger. He was like a real-life Captain America. You know, it was like a mix between Captain America with the red, white, and blue. You know, at the Great American Bash 1990, when that happened, he took on Ric Flair. And then, like,
hey,
Steve
Rock. Hey, Malcolm, it's Chess. I got a question for you.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the North American Wrestling Alliance? Do you have any question? I know you said you had a question you wanted to ask Mario. So give us briefly your thoughts on the NAWA and then ask Mario what you were talking about when we were off the air.
Yeah, Mario, I found your site on YouTube. You wrestled some cool wrestlers. You wrestled Jake the Snake Roberts, June 28, 1986. I just want to know, Mario, did Jake put Damien on you, and what did it feel like when Damien was on you, if he did? I'm just asking.
Well, I had my eyes closed, number one. but when we were in the dressing room, Jake made sure to tell me to keep my head pressed against the canvas and not lift it so Damien wouldn't get underneath and choke me. I thought that was kind of important. So I kept the back of my head pretty braced on the canvas so he wouldn't get behind my neck. So it's, the match itself was good.
Yeah, I forgot that was you, but I believe it was on Championship Wrestling because there wasn't Superstars yet, you know, and I, you know, every time Jake, I've met Jake several times, and Jake's, he's a big Raider fan. Last time I met him, September 23rd, 2017 at Lincoln Sons of Pomona, California, Jake had this black T-shirt, and at the top of it in silver, it said Raiders on it, and he said, I had this made for you, Malcolm. And I was like, that was so cool, Mario. The second question I got for you is there were so many great wrestlers back then around, top wrestlers, and Macho Man didn't come in until after WrestleMania, but Paul Mr. Wonderful Orndorff was around. Why didn't they put Paul in a main event at WrestleMania? He was a really good wrestler. I mean, he should have the championship from Hogan at least one time, you know, in my opinion.
Well, I think Orndorff would agree with you. You know, I did I was part of a show way back when in Bridgeport. It was called Pretty Wonderful. And
yeah,
it was Roma and Orndorff, and they asked me to come. And I was back there just talking to Orndorff, and he said that I said, do you miss it? And he said, I miss the NFL, is what he said. I said, what about wrestling? And he said, well, I wasn't used to my full potential. You know, I think he had a problem. I think he feels the same way that you do, that they didn't use him the way he wanted to be used. But, you know, I would have took Orndorff's spot in a minute. Yeah.
Hey, Malcolm, what do you think about Tony Capone's earlier announcement? December 19th, Daytona Beach, Florida, Jingle Brawl. The NAWA's first pay-per-view.
I know, Chaz, is Tony on there? Is he on here?
My man, Tony, Malcolm, what's going on, buddy?
There you go.
I'm here, man.
There he is.
What's going on, my man, Malcolm? What's going on, buddy?
You got a Screen Actors Guild card. You're an actual actor. You worked in Hollywood. You were a wrestler, you know, and you're a fan of mine. That is so cool. I just love that. I'm riding with you. I told the Stinger, when I become an actor, when I make it someday, I'm going to grab that surfboard, I'm going to ride it, I'm going to avoid all the obstacles and take it as far as I can. Things, so that's a great attitude to have, you know. So like, you know, Tony, I'm so excited about your new organization and the pay-per-view. I don't want to announce anything about it, the date. Chaz told me not to do that. I don't want to give anything away. You're my friend, Tony. And if I come back to New York, can you take me to a Yankee game at Yankee Stadium and Madison Square Garden, where all the great WWF matches took place? I just love
absolutely,
that
place. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. When you come to New York, you got carte blanche, Malcolm. Carte blanche, man.
And one more thing, Tony. I hate to ask you this, and I don't know if you'll, I'm going to ask this yes or no question, but if I'm going to acting, I go to acting school, would you become my manager and my agent for me?
Yeah, we are talked about that. I'll open up doors for you. I'll open up all the doors I can. I told you that. I'll do that for you. But Malcolm, my night.
I'm sorry, Tony. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, my night is not going to be complete unless you do one of your invitations for me, my man.
Oh, I want to do somebody different for you. Is that okay?
Go ahead. Yeah, sure.
I'm going to go about the NWA, but Tony Capone has created great food. I want you to take your dogs, wipe them up, shine them up, and stick them straight up your candy ass and just smell what Tony Capone and the NWA are cooking.
Wow.
You're the best, Malcolm. I love you, man. You're my fan, man. I'm your number one fan,
you,
bro.
You're my fan. I'm a fan of yours. I'm a fan of yours more than you're a fan of me.
Thank you, my man. Thank you. Sorry to get back to you this week. It's been a real hectic week, but you've been on my mind, Malcolm. You have been on my mind every day.
And I know you're busy, Tony. I don't want to bother you like I don't bother Dave. Only time Dave wants to call me, I let Dave Arquette call me, but I don't like to get people's business. But I'll tell you what I'm excited about, Tony. I was in a TV shop here at Merlin's in Pocatello, Idaho, and Alan Calvin, I was looking at this 85-inch TV at $9,000. And Tony, Alan said, Malcolm, He said, someday we're going to have a 100-inch TV. You know how cool it would be to watch Batman and Robin on a 100-inch television? I mean, I'll be rocking, man.
I can see Batman and Robin. Yeah. I can see you watching the NAWA on that 100-screen TV.
Yeah, I'll be watching old matches with Hogan, Mario Mancini. I'll find some old matches of you. I'll hook it up to YouTube. I'll watch it on 100-inch TV.
Yeah, I got a question.
Could you imagine Chaz Moretti walking to the ring on a 100-inch TV? You wouldn't know what to do with yourself, Malcolm.
I want to see you on 100-inch TV, and Amy, too.
Good God. Eric, guys. Steve, any questions that you would have for Tony or for Mario tonight?
Yes. I was enjoying the Mario interview earlier. You mentioned working with Undertaker. How was that like, given that he was so early on in his WWE career? And was he called Kane the Undertaker back then?
He came out as Kane the Undertaker. Like I said, you don't know it at the time. It was just another routine night where I looked up at the board. There's 3 hours of taping, each hour is a week. So you see if you're on the first, second, or third hour. It's just looking up at the board, and it said Undertaker v. Mancini, and I just searched them out and introduced myself, and I said, what's your finish? And he said, Tombstone. I said, well, what is that? And he said, it's a reverse pile driver. And I said, well, I've taken that many times from Morocco, so that's not a problem. And he said, there's just one thing. I'm going to walk the top rope. And I just kind of looked up at him, well, 6'10" of them, and I'm like, you're going to walk the top rope? And he went, yeah. He goes, but there's one thing. I'm going to grab your arm into an arm bar. He goes, you got to keep your elbow locked. He goes, if your elbow collapses, I'm screwed. I'm gonna fall. I said, yeah, that's not going to happen. You don't have to worry about that. So he said, okay. So the funny part about that, if you watch it on YouTube and nobody picks it up until I point it out, is he said, I'm going to clothesline you backwards over the top rope. And I said, yeah, okay. And I walked away and I said, geez, I've been here 6 years. I've never done that. And I just sat in the chair and I said, how am I going to do that? I've never done that. And I said, well, there's only one way. If the top rope is level with my waist, I'll go right over. And if you watch it on YouTube again, it, now that I mention it, you'll catch it. So he chokes me and he walks away to kind of intimidate the referee. When he does that, I push down on the top rope to bring it to my waist. Not only that, I even take a glance back to make sure I'm not going to land on anything. And then he gives me the clothesline, and I go over. And every time I explain that, then people watch it again and go, oh, I see it. You're doing it right there. Because when they watch it initially, they don't pick up on it. So, that was the funny part about that match is there was one thing of all the bumps I've ever taken that I never did that before. And I had to figure out how I was going to do that and thank God it looked really good. So yeah, Mark was fine. He wasn't stiff at all. He was a good guy.
Man, it's awesome to hear those stories. I'm such a Mark. I had to play the words there, but I met Brother Love years ago just to see his first manager. That's how big of a Taker mark I am. So I'm glad to hear that story. And I did want to ask, is there any matches of yours that are on the network that you'd recommend anybody check out?
I think on the network, one of the things that I like to look at, only because we've been brothers for 36 years, and that's Roma and I on Tuesday Night Titans with Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
That's on the network. I'm on there with Bundy. That's on a couple matches. I think I'm on with Bundy on the network. But yeah, I'm proud of that too. I'm a little, you know, I got a little bit of a history of, you know, to type my name in on the network, and I'm there. They remembered me, and they remembered me to put me in two volumes of the WWE Encyclopedia. So, you know, when I do wrestling conventions, that, you know, most people don't buy the 8x10. They come by and they want me to sign their encyclopedia. So, yeah, I think the biggest compliment I ever got was somebody got my autograph in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and then they went to another autograph, a wrestling convention somewhere in Jersey, and they went up to Mark Henry. And I'm right above Mark Henry. And Mark Henry looked at him and said, "Is that really Mario Mancini's autograph?" And they went, "Yeah. Yeah, I met him in Rhode Island." And Mark Henry said, "Man, I would love to meet him." He goes, "I used to watch him when I was a little kid." So
That was exactly what I said.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. That was pretty cool.
Was there any competition between you and other carpenters or enhancement talent?
You're asking a loaded question that I can keep you on the telephone for another hour on. I think maybe you've listened to other podcasts that I've done. I think you've listened to how candid I've been about this. And I think you're really looking to push my button. I tried to make it through my talent. There were some people I know damn well that I was a better worker than. They couldn't wrestle their way out of a wet paper bag. And I was a better worker while I was sleeping than when they were in the ring. But because they did favors that I would not do, they ended up getting, you know, a gimmick, and I didn't. And back in the 80s, that's the way it was. So I was smiling ear to ear when Jose Luis Rivera became a conquistador. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. When SD got with Roma, I was happy for the both of them. Even when Danny Davis got his break from a referee to a worker, I did a job for him. I was happy to do it, you know. Danny's a great guy. But that was probably one of the worst nights of my life when I had to do a job for this particular individual. And that night, I wrapped them in a small package, and I held it stiff for a long two count. And he said, let go. And I let go just before three, just to give him a hard time, because he was there for the wrong reason, and ended up spending 30 years, you know, with Vince McMahon, and I understand has made a pretty penny. Listen, I'm Italian American, and I'm a Christian, and I believe that one day we all have to stand before God and answer. So I'm good with that, and I try to do it through shared talent, and I didn't get a break because, number one, I didn't have a bloodline in the business. Number two, I wasn't a freak of nature. And number three, I wasn't gay. So the odds were stacked against me. So I would love to be a freak or, you know, have a bloodline in the business. I mean, the closest thing I came to was Strongbow. And in a couple of years after I got out, I bumped into a guy named Lou Jean Frito, who used to work for the office. And he was at production meetings. And I was like, I saw him at a 7-Eleven, and he's like, "You know, Mario, you have no idea how many times Chief brought your name up in production meetings, and Pat just would shoot it down." And I'm like, you know what? I really didn't need to hear that. I don't want to hear that. You know, you just let it be. It is what it is. Just let it be. I didn't need to hear that. So, you know, Strongbow tried for me. You know, the reason why I got out was the last argument I had with him of why I'm not getting a push or getting a little bit. Strongbow at the time had his son Mark working, and he couldn't get him on a booking sheet. So when Strongbow looked at me and said, I can't get my own kid booked, what do you think I could do for you? I knew it was time to get out. And I got out on April 26, 1992. My last match was in Huntsville, Alabama against Rick Rude. I walked away and never came back.
Well, Mario, I got to tell you, though, amongst the Italian-Americans, you're one of us, and you were one of the guys that, like I said, that we all looked out for in terms of watching you when you were on television. And if it was up to my grandmother, she would have wielded that cane at anybody that came at you. Just thought I'd let you know that.
I appreciate that.
I got a couple more questions. Thank you for answering my previous questions. And was there any place else you wanted to work after leaving WWF?
No. The first time I worked after the WWF was in 1999 for the NAWA. So, you know, I get criticized for that. There was a gentleman that was nice enough to make a little biography of my career on YouTube. It kind of touched me. I didn't know he was going to do that, but he was correct. So what I did was I entered the land of giants, and I stayed there. And I think if I went to a territory where, you know, there was a Jerry Lawler was the top dog, you know,
right.
You know, guys like Dusty Rhodes and stuff like that. Maybe it would have been a little better, but I was hell bent on the WWF. And when I got out, you know, looking back at it, I was a little pompous because my first love in my life was baseball, and I really wanted to be a Major League Baseball player. So wrestling was actually my second love. So I kind of looked at it like that. I looked at it like I played for the Yankees for 8 years, and now I'm not with the Yankees anymore. So I'm going to go to AAA, and I just looked at it like that. As far as the independent circuit, and I get criticized for that because after I got out, I guess I could have done pretty well on the independent circuit, but I decided to just leave wrestling behind me and just go on with my life. So I didn't consider working for anybody else or putting my boots on, or I just felt that if I couldn't work for the WWF at the time, Titan Sports, then I didn't want to work anywhere. That was my attitude. I didn't want to wrestle for anyone. I couldn't, you know, I just remember the days where Terry Garvin would come up to me and SD Jones and say, listen, we're going to lease you guys out. You know, we need you to go to New Hampshire or Maine or something. And he would lease us out, to a Muskie Solo or a Mario Savoldi, and it would be me, SD, or Mike Sharp, and they would pay the office a fee to get us, and we'd go up there, and we'd walk into the dressing room, and there are all these independent guys there, and we're walking in, you know, being on TV every week, and they actually had a little attitude toward us, you know what I mean? Like, oh, here they come, you know what I mean? So, and a couple of guys were nice. They would come up to me and say, you know, how is it being there and what's it like and everything. But I just remember the attitudes of most of them. I took a lot of beatings to be there, and I sacrificed a lot. And I'm not saying independent pro wrestlers didn't. And they don't. I have a lot of respect for them in this day and age. But back then, if you want to go to the WWF, then go there and give it a shot and see if they let you in. I mean, don't don't look at, no, I'm not any better than you. You know what I mean? I'm not, I don't think I'm better than anybody. I just happen to be in that position, but that doesn't mean I'm better than you. So, you know, I kind of got a cold feeling in those dressing rooms, and I just didn't want to do it. So, until Tony Capone called me, and at first I said no to that until he told me I was working with Bundy, and then I went, and then, you know, I started dabbling back into it in 2007, for a couple of years, and then, you know, finally in 2015 we opened the Paradise Alley. So, you know, I went in the ring a few times then, but and of course I would work once a year for the IAW in Indiana for Brian Costello, once a year. So I'm 54 now. I really don't want to lace my boots anymore. So,
why was law the next step for you? Law work.
The law?
Yeah, I mean, like doing. I think you said you worked at a law firm.
Yeah. Well, what happened was I got out of wrestling in '92 and I tooled around for a couple of years, and I decided to go to college, and I got a bachelor's degree in business, and I ended up becoming friends with a lawyer. And in 1995, you know, in my second year of college, he said, "Why don't you come to work for me?" Because he liked my communication skills. And so I decided to go and work for him, and I was wrapping up college, and he said, "You know, why don't you go to law school?" And I said, "Man, I'm too dumb to go to law school." But I ended up going to law school. I ended up going to law school anyway. And, you know, and I've been with that law firm for, you know, 25 years. And, you know, it was just, you know, and pro wrestling got me through it because it wasn't easy. I mean, the dean of the law school called me a tenacious son of a bitch. And, you know, I looked down and said, "Dean, you ever see your big toe in front of your face?" And he goes, "Of course I have." I go, "Well, you're on your stomach." And he kind of had a grotesque look on his face, and I said, "I have. This is nothing." So, you know, pro wrestling
is awesome.
Other things in my life, a lot of other things in my life. So it got me through law school, certainly got me through the bar exam. You know, and that's what I try to teach my students, that, you know, you're not just learning professional wrestling. You're learning a life lesson, you know, something to carry with you for the rest of your life, to face other challenges in life. So, because you know, once you get into that ring, that I quit isn't an option. It never is. So, and if it is, you don't belong in the business.
Thank you so much. Seth?
Yeah, you know, guys, I can't tell you how much of a privilege and an honor it was to have all of you on tonight and listen to Mario's story and listen to Tony's announcements and gain an insight about Malcolm and just, you know, find out more things that we would never have known had we all not gotten together. And so I want to thank Mario Mancini for coming on tonight. I want to thank Tony Capone, as always, for appearing and for running the NAWA and giving us a platform to talk about old school wrestling with a new school flair. Steve, thank you for your questions. Always insightful. Malcolm, look forward to seeing you and talking to you each and every week.
Chad,
yes, sir.
Can I ask one question for Mario Mancini real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Mario, there was a match. Piper, after WrestleMania 2, he took a break, came back in August of 86 on Championship Wrestling on Saturday, and he took on this guy, AJ Petrucci, and Petrucci slapped him in the face, and Piper put his hand in his trunks and wrestled him with one knee. Now, if Vince would have told you you could have done that with AJ Petrucci, would you have done it? And do you think you could have beat him like Piper with one hand? I just want to ask you that.
Well, it's funny you mention AJ Petrucci, because we were the first class out of Tony Altamar's wrestling school. It was myself, AJ, Dave Barbie, and Seth Cohen. So we went in together, and I think AJ and I would have worked very well together.
Because
we did for months in wrestling school. So,
Mario, is he still alive, AJ Petrucci?
He sure is. He's on my Facebook, and he shows his muscle cars very often.
Mario, if I meet him, would you tell him I want him to sign my Roddy Piper T-shirt just for that one moment? I just love that one moment.
Malcolm, I'll do anything for you.
Thank you, Mario. I would love that, man. Maybe you can go to Yankee Stadium and Madison Square Garden with me and Tony.
Oh, that's awesome. What do you think, Tom?
Hey, Chaz. Chaz.
Yes, sir.
I told you, whatever Malcolm wants, he's got. But if I could address Mario just for a second, I want to hear two special things. Number one, Mr. Mancini. One thing I just realized tonight is that I'd never have an autographed picture of Mario Mancini, my mentor, my trainer, the guy that made me who I am today. So, Mr. Mancini,
Oscar,
can I have the privilege of having an autographed photograph of Mr. Mancini himself?
I want one, too.
Sure.
Uh-oh. Mario, you got requests for merch.
And,
sure.
You're in demand.
Part two, Mancini, if you remember back in the early days with the IPW up in, I think it was Wallingford, Connecticut. It was one of my first matches in the business on the independent before I turned, like, quote-unquote pro per se. And we did a thing back then where it was the trainer versus the student, if you remember that particular match back in the day.
I do.
Okay. My question to you is, based on my situation and my age and everything else now, when I officially retire from wrestling, it would be honored to get back into the ring with you just one more dance, just to walk out
sure.
the way I walked in.
Absolutely. I wouldn't have it any other way.
I have so much respect for you for opening up the doors in the business for me and, you know, getting me my WWF shot and everything else back in those days. And, you know, when we talk about brothers, you know, from another mother, that's sincere and that's from the heart. And, I can never thank you because what you did for me in my career, no one by far has done even close to what you've done for me over the years. And I personally want to say thank you so much. And I'm honored and privileged that you're on board with what I'm doing now.
Well, let me tell you something, Tone. You deserve everything that's coming. You worked hard for it. Nobody gave you anything. Nothing was handed on the silver platter. You worked for everything, man. You sacrificed and you worked for everything. So, you know, I love you and all the best wishes.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It means a lot to me, man.
You know, guys, I just want to give a final thought on my side before I let Dr. John take us home. We touched on the idea of honor, respect, humility, and fraternity. And that's really what separates this great sport that we love from others. I mean, you hear about it all the time that professional athletes will come and go and some stay in touch and some don't. But I think that bond, that unwritten, unspoken feeling that we're all part of something special never leaves once you get into business. And, you know, I want to thank everybody for bringing that back up to the forefront tonight.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Charles. Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it. It's so true. Thank you.
Yeah. Dr. John, in the wrestling vernacular, it's time to go home. You want to take us home?
Yes, I'd be glad to take everybody home because I tell you what, this has been the most incredible episode that we could ever have. I mean, we have talked about everything. It's been unbelievable. I'm actually, just so that you know, I'm getting ready to call Tony after this. You know, Tony, I hate to say this, you are the one person that we always call after everything happens. But thank you so much for everybody being on and listening to Wrestling Tonight. And thank you so much. Thank you, Steve Logan. Thank you, Chaz. Thank you, every guest that we've had. And thank you so much. And we'll see you next week. Won't we?
Thank you, guys.
Take care, everybody.
Chaz. Thank you.
Take
Mario,
care, guys.
Bye,
take
guys.
Care, Malcolm.
Right.
Take care, my friend. We'll see you soon, Malcolm.
All right, Malcolm. I'll talk to you later tonight. So, along with Tony and everything. So, thanks very much.
SummerSlam 89.
Really? You had to go there?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
All right. So look, thanks everybody. We'll see you next week on Wrestling Tonight.